Record, I cannot do 500 chin-ups. As Nate said, a couple of times a year, your church and my church do a series like this where we swap pastors. And we've been doing this for a couple of years now, and now we try to do it at least about every 6 months or so. Nate mentioned earlier today that there may be some of you who haven't been here before or are new, so let me explain to you this series. We are in, for you guys, the fourth week of it, I believe, and it's called Word to the Wise. And we are going to pay attention today to a 3,000-year-old piece of literature in your Bible called the Proverbs, collected by somebody named King Solomon. And all we're trying to do in this series is learn to live a little more wisely, a little smarter, a little sager, and we will see the benefit of it. Early on in his life, in his pastoral work, one of the most famous pastors in America in the last 20 or 30 years is a guy named Bill Hybels, pastors Willow Creek Community Church in the burbs of Chicago. Very early on in his pastoral ministry, he was asking one of his mentors what he could do practically in his spiritual life to stay well, to fight the good fight, to finish the course, to not stray, to be a good pastor, to safeguard himself. And one of the things that his mentor told him was, every day, read about 10 verses from the Proverbs. Every day. And he's done it faithfully for now 20 years. And he would tell you in one of his books that it's one of the most transformative spiritual practices that he himself has ever experienced. Just a small daily dose of this 3,000-year-old book. Let's go ahead to the next slide. Today, we're going to pay attention to a specific subject that actually gets a surprising amount of ink in this 3,000-year-old book. Something that will resonate with you and with me, no doubt, because it is something that we talk about in our culture in the year 2015 in America, and that is mental health, your mental or emotional well-being, your psychological wellness. In the Bible, the Proverbs, and elsewhere, oftentimes the words you will hear for what we mean by mental well-being are the words your heart, your soul. My favorite word in Greek in the New Testament, the language of the New Testament, is your splagna, that is your guts, your passions, the things that drive you internally. And since all of us care about our mental well-being, we're going to spend a Sunday today talking about what wise King Solomon told us 3,000 years ago about how we can live wisely about our mental health. One of the images in the Proverbs for your heart and my heart that gets used with quite a bit of regularity is the image of deep waters. That your heart and my heart, your mental well-being and my mental well-being, are like deep waters. Have you ever stood on a bridge overlooking a large river, like, say, the Mississippi? And you can't see one side or the other in its widest point. You look straight down into the river and you cannot plumb its depths. You have no idea how deep it actually is. And it's deceptive. It looks like it's this large, lazy river that you could jump in and swim across with no problem. But if you know anything about big rivers like that, actually, they move really quick. The current is really strong, but you can't tell. Proverbs says that's what your heart's like. It's like deep waters. In fact, that first proverb up there, Proverbs chapter 14, verse 10, says, you will find that it is almost impossible to express sometimes what's in your own heart. You try with your wife or your husband or a really good friend to talk about what's going on the inside. And the more words that you use, the worse you feel like you're doing at expressing what's really going on within you. You ever had that experience? Ah, then you see the truth of what Solomon is saying. Your heart and my heart are like deep waters. How have you experienced that before in your life? There are so many how-to books. There are so many people making multi-millions of dollars trying to convince you how to be well mentally or emotionally that sometimes it's oversimplified. Solomon says you shouldn't do that. You should realize that the most complicated thing about you is your interior life. What goes on inside that nobody else sees? How have you experienced that? I remember as a child, I grew up handicapped. And for anyone you know who grew up handicapped, you grow up very self-aware, very self-conscious. And people don't know that inside your head all the time, you're watching to see if other people can pick up on the fact that you're different. That you're a little off. You're a little weird. You're not like them. That's when I begin to experience for myself that what was going on inside of me were deep waters. And I couldn't stop them. I couldn't tame them. These worries and these anxieties were there and they were real and I didn't know what to do with them. That was one of the first ways that I found it in my life. What about you? Maybe you remember a time when you were praying or you were worshiping and you felt something move within you that was so strong, you felt like you could scarcely contain it, that your body was going to burst open, that you were going to be propelled like a lightning bolt from that church service or that moment of prayer into the rest of your life, and your life would never be the same. In that moment, you found out that what goes on inside of you, your heart, your soul, are deep waters. They are strong and they are stirring, and you cannot figure out its current. It is much stronger than you think it is. Maybe you've watched someone you love, a friend or a spouse, unravel mentally, emotionally. Given the number of people in the room today, I would suspect that at least 10 or more of us have seen this. You have watched somebody wrestle with depression or anxiety, and you have watched their entire life fall apart because of their mental health. They didn't contract cancer. They didn't break a bone. They weren't paralyzed. Something going on inside of them that you couldn't see hurt them. It may have even appeared to you like it ruined them. You seen that? Yeah. See, the human heart is deep waters. And Solomon says in that second proverb up on the screen, you need to realize that you need to be wise enough to try to begin to figure out what's going on inside of you. You need to plumb the depths of the deep waters that is your soul, that is your heart. This is wisdom for you and for me. In fact, for Christian people like you and I, for people who are part of missional churches like yours and like mine, it goes one step further than that. One of the greatest gifts you will ever give other people is to help them figure out what's going on inside of them. The wise person, chapter 20, verse 5 says, can help somebody else figure out what on earth is rumbling around inside the deep ocean that is the human life, the human heart. Jesus said we're supposed to love our neighbor the way that we ourselves want to be loved. One of the most practical ways that you can live out the second great commandment is Proverbs 20, verse 5. Help those you're close to. Help those God brings to you. Help your neighbors be wise about their heart and what goes on there. Now, I don't think I have to convince you, by the way, that your internal life, your psychology, is really, really important to who you are, to the others around you, and to your well-being at large. But next slide, I want to show you a couple of ways that the Proverbs, 3,000 years old, show you just how vital this subject is for you and for me. This is Proverbs chapter 27, verse 19. Solomon writes, "Just as water," there's that image again, by the way, "just as water reflects the face, so the human heart reflects who the person is." Who's the real you? Who are you really? Because the truth is, there are many yous, just like there are many me's. Odds are, one of the yous that you have is the person you are at work, if you have a career or a job. And that person sometimes is not the real you. You're showing up to do a job to make money. You're showing up to fill a role in a company that may or may not care who you are in the end. You are a means to an end for them, and that's about all. Maybe in your house, in your family, you around your spouse or around your kids are simply trying to be the person that keeps them happy, or you're trying to be the person that they want you to be, and this may not be the real you. I don't have to convince you that many of us live very superficial lives, where we show people a person that may not be who we really are. You know, biblically, using the entire Bible as a frame of reference, there are some other ways you need to think about who you really are. According to the New Testament, who you really are at every given moment of your life is you are someone who is loved by God. Regardless of who you are, regardless of whether or not you want Him to love you, regardless of how much you are open to that love, regardless of how you're living at any given moment, we believe that God, who is love, loves you at all times. That's the real you. You are what you do. The real you is your actions. Jesus' problem with the Pharisees and the Gospels is they said one thing and did another. The real you is what you do, not what you say you'll do. But according to the Proverbs, you know who the real you is? It's the you that nobody can see. It's the you of your thoughts. It's the you of your feelings. It's that interior you that Proverbs says is deep waters. The one you carry around with you all the time, your consciousness, where you spend your time and your energy mentally. That's who you really are. And depending on who you are and where you may be today, certainly it is true for me, sometimes that can be very affirming and sometimes that's fairly scary. To realize that regardless of what everybody else sees, when I am at my worst, I am my depression. I am my anxiety. This is who I really am, and I can't fake it. I have to take responsibility for how well or how poor I am internally at any given time. This is the real me. I suspect you know that and have experienced that. Next slide. This to me is just as powerful and just as poignant. You know why it really matters what goes on inside of you? Proverbs 20, chapter 20, verse 27 says, "The human spirit, your heart, what goes on inside of you, is the lamp of the Lord. It searches your innermost being." Your heart, your soul, is the lamp of the Lord, Solomon says. Oftentimes, the place in your life where God will speak to you the most or you will encounter Him the most is your heart. Which means that if your mental life, your emotional well-being is off, that light becomes dimmer and dimmer. You feel like God is distant from you. You feel like you can't hear Him. The human heart, rightly ordered, is the lamp of the Lord. Everything else in your life may feel dark. You may feel like everything else in your life is confusing. It may be open-ended, but you can at least count on that. That if your heart, your interior life is ordered right, then God can be found there. But sadly, the opposite is true. If your emotions are out of sort, if your mind is spent on the wrong things, if who you are on the inside does not match who people think you are on the outside, then that lamp of the Lord, to use that phrase, gets smaller and smaller, dimmer and dimmer, until you feel like you're standing in a dark room with no windows and no light to be found. The proverb says, your soul, your heart, is the lamp of the Lord. Which is why, next slide, the single greatest piece of advice that Solomon gives us about our emotional well-being, our interior life, our psychology, is Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23, guard it, protect it, build a barrier around it, build a fort around it with strong, sturdy walls, and don't let the wrong things in. Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23 says very simply, guard your heart because it is the fountain or the spring of your entire life. Who you will become, who you are at any given moment, is a result of who you are at heart, your mental well-being. So guard it, Solomon says. Pay attention to it. Protect it. This is what you have to do. Otherwise, you may suffer the fate of having a heart that's out of order, it's disheveled, it's a mess, and as a result, your entire life will be a mess too. Over the course of the entire 31 chapters of the book of Proverbs, Solomon gives us a lot of counsel about how you do this, how you guard your heart. You might call them action steps, things that you should avoid or things you should do to protect your heart. And that's really where we want to pay most of our attention today. So next slide. Here is a list of the things that Solomon says hurt your heart. These are the things that poison the human heart. They ruin your emotions. They ruin your mind. These are the things that you cannot let through the fort's gates that you will build around your heart. This is the kind of list. Solomon says on several occasions you need to be careful that, this is the biblical word, wickedness is something that is poisonous to the human soul. Wickedness, what's that? That's you doing the wrong thing and knowing you're doing it. And not only does God disapprove of that, but practically speaking, you're actually doing yourself harm when you know what's right and you choose to do wrong instead. I remember very vividly a pastor friend of mine, I would consider him a pastoral mentor of mine, telling me the story when I was a young pastor of a husband that he was meeting with for counsel. And he didn't know why this husband was coming to him, but he sat down in his office with this husband. And the husband began to talk about the fact that his 20-year marriage was ending. And you guys know as well as I do, divorce happens, and it happens for all kinds of reasons, some good, some bad, some unavoidable. Well, in this case, the pastor talked to this husband at length, and the husband went on to say that he was exceedingly angry at his soon-to-be ex-wife, not an uncommon thing in divorce, and that he'd gotten very vindictive, that he was trying to make this divorce process as bad as he could on his soon-to-be ex-wife. He was trying to keep as much money for himself as he could. He was trying to keep his kids as much as he could. He was trying to give her as little custody as he possibly could. And then he went on to say to his pastor, you know, I feel kind of depressed. I feel kind of anxious. I'm not doing well inside. Emotionally, I'm very low. I feel like I may need to even go see a psychiatrist and see, maybe I need to get on some medication and whatnot. And the pastor, having far more courage than I assure you, ever would, looked at him and said, I think you should feel depressed. Not because you're getting divorced, but because you're not taking care of your wife, soon to be your ex. Ex-wives, ex-husbands are not exempt from the second great command of Jesus. They're your neighbors too. And it's okay if you feel like God is telling you to end your marriage. I get that. but you cannot treat her like an enemy. You cannot treat her than the worst person in your life. You can't do that. Wickedness sometimes, in this particular case, choosing to be vindictive and vengeful in the case of that husband, yet has consequences. It poisons your heart. And you can't avoid it. When you harbor things like that, when you choose things like that, they will make you depressed. They will make you anxious. These are one of the things Solomon says we have to pay attention to. This list is very eye-opening. Pain, Solomon says, is something that, if you're not careful, it's going to ruin who you are on the inside. And who you are on the inside is the real you, from which the rest of your life, all your relationships flow. This is how that sounds. This is Proverbs chapter 18, verse 14. The human spirit can endure sickness, but a crushed or broken heart, no one can bear. Now, if you've lived long enough, I don't have to convince you that one of the things that's going to happen to you at some point in your life is you are going to get hurt tremendously. I don't mean a little kind of hurt that you can talk about. I mean the kind of hurt that's so big you can't talk about it without crying. And that's coming. If it hadn't happened to you yet, it's coming. Someone you love is going to die unexpectedly. Someone's going to treat you so badly that you have a hard time getting over it. This is just life. I don't wish it on you, but you know as well as I do that it's coming. What you choose to do with that pain matters a great deal, because that pain has the potential to ruin your heart. It has the potential to weigh heavily on who you are on the inside. It is like this massive gravitational force that will warp or skew every one of your emotions, your priorities in life, even how you treat other people, how you see other people. It can make you anxious around other people. You know this. I suspect everyone in the room knows this from personal experience. You have to take responsibility for the pain that you know is going to come your way in life. And if you don't cope with it, if you don't deal with it, if you don't take steps to heal it, then it will, according to Proverbs, poison you. Proverbs says on several occasions that your body, your physical body, is one of the things that, in this case, on this list, can be harmful to your mental health, or as you'll see on the next screen when we get to it, it actually can be good for your mental health. You too have experienced this in your life. Guess what happens when you don't sleep enough? Guess what happens when you allow work to stress you out too much? Guess what happens when you go too long without getting some physical activity? All of a sudden, you begin to notice about yourself on the inside, gosh, I'm not as happy as I used to be. I'm feeling low. I worry more. That's because Christian people, among others, believe that you are a body and a soul. You are material and immaterial. The overlap of what's physical about you and what's spiritual about you is indivisible. And there is a relationship between the two. What you do to your body affects your spirit. What you do to your spirit affects your body. If you don't take care of your body, then your heart will not be taken care of either. We're going to talk about this on the next screen in the positive way. So let me pause there, because I want to get to the next one. This is one that I don't know if we had had a show of hands, we would have picked for ourselves. But this is one that Proverbs is very clear about. Here's one of the problems that you and I run into with our hearts. It's one of the errors that we make, and it's one of the reasons that we end up being not very well emotionally and mentally. This is Proverbs chapter 13, verse 12. Solomon writes very simply, "Hope deferred," or "hope delayed," "makes the heart sick. But a desire fulfilled is a tree of life." Very clearly, Solomon says, in your life and mine, one of the things that is going to weigh you down emotionally is when you have to wait for your dreams, your hopes, when they are, his word, delayed or deferred. Now, see, here's the thing. we are often very guilty of having hopes or dreams that take a long time to fulfill, right? You're 40 years old, you have kids who are in junior high, and you can't wait for the day when you're 65 or 70 and you finally get to retire. You get to sell the house, downsize to the condo in Holland, and life's going to get better. I hope that happens for you. According to Solomon, the problem with that hope is it's too far away. It's 25 years away. And if the kind of hopes and dreams that you have are going to take that long to be fulfilled in your life, Solomon says your heart in time is going to grow sick. Emotionally and mentally, you are not going to be well. We are guilty oftentimes of having hopes and dreams that we don't ever take action to see fulfilled. We want something, but we don't want it enough to do anything about it. Those are the kind of hopes that Solomon's talking about. Now see, the flip side, as you'll see on the next screen, as you heard in that verse, is when we see a desire or a dream fulfilled, it uplifts us internally. It's good for us mentally. So it seems like to me, if you and I are going to take him up on what he's saying here, and we're going to guard our hearts well, you and I would be very wise to make sure we have a list of hopes someplace. Maybe just filed away in our brain, maybe written down in our journal, maybe our wife and I put it together on our laptop, it doesn't matter where, but you need to have a list of hopes that are short term, that you are willing to work for and do something about, but that are short term. What might that look like for you? We say, Christian people say all over America every given Sunday morning, gosh, you know, I want to have a better relationship with God. That is a hope deferred. That is a hope delayed. That is an open-ended hope that goes nowhere if you're not going to do something about it and if you can't make some short-term goals. Maybe instead what you do is you say, wow, I really want to get to know the people at the branch better. I love what we're about. I love who we are, but I feel disconnected. I don't know people. And so you make the goal, you dream the dream of inviting several families over for lunch after church on Sunday for a month. Only for a month. That's 4 weeks, not long. And you know what's going to happen? You're going to invite four families over. You're going to enjoy time getting to know the other weirdos that call the branch home. And at the end of the month, you're going to feel good about it because the desire has been fulfilled. And you'll get to know faces and get to know lives. And you'll feel like, gosh, I'm a little better connected with people. And all of a sudden, the desire has been fulfilled. And you'll watch your heart be uplifted. Fascinating. Solomon says so many times the problem with our emotions, the problem with our heart, is that our hopes are far too away. We need to think smaller and shorter term. Come up with hopes and dreams that then we can actually see fulfilled. I love the last one, by the way. Solomon is great about talking sense about complicated subjects like the deep waters of our heart. Solomon says in Proverbs chapter 25, verse 20, in a very powerful turn of phrase, as is often his case, like vinegar poured on an open wound. Ouch, right? Like vinegar poured on an open wound is one who sings songs to a heavy heart. You have probably experienced this before in your life. You've probably even done it to people in your life. One of the things that is not good for your mental well-being, one of the things that breaks you down psychologically, is when the people around you don't respond to your struggles well. According to Solomon, the way they don't do it well is they expect you to be different than how you are. They expect you to be more positive, optimistic, uplifted, joyous when you don't feel like it. They sing songs to a heavy heart. And it's like pouring alcohol in an open wound. It stings when you do that. Here's the thing. When you see a friend who's going through a season of grief, a season of fear, a season of worry, a season of great pain, you need to let them. So often, frankly, the reason that we don't let other people go through seasons like that is that we're afraid we might too. And we want them to get better faster because it means that when we go through the same kind of season, we'll get better faster too. And sadly, sometimes seasons of anxiety or depression go on for years. And there can be hope in those dark times, but don't you dare be somebody who falls prey to the wise counsel of Solomon here, who says, don't sing songs to a heavy heart. Respect the fact that they are broken people. Respect the fact that for them right now, they're having a hard time putting one foot in front of the other and making it through just one day. Don't look at their pain and minimize it. Would you have the courage instead to put your arm around their shoulder and walk with them through it? Maybe even enter into their pain a little bit, empathize with it, and feel the depth of it. Because when you go through something like that, that's going to be what you need too. It is actually ruinous to the human heart for us to sing away someone's deep struggle. I so appreciate that about the wisdom of Solomon. Now, here's the flip side. Go ahead to the next slide. Those are things that ruin your heart. Here are things that if you're going to guard your heart, you would pay attention to very carefully. This is Solomon's list. Now, often, as you'll see in that list, it's the flip side of what he said works against your mental well-being. So if doing things you know to be wrong consciously works against you, then doing what God says is right actually is good for you mentally and emotionally. Your pastor, Chris, in a couple of Sundays is going to talk about the power of words, but over and over, Solomon will talk about how the words people use to you, even the words you say to yourself internally, have the power to shape how you feel and who you are. One of the verses, I'm not going to steal his thunder, but I will give you one of the images that the Proverbs uses about the power of words to shape you internally. It will be as pleasant to your heart, Solomon says, as honey is to your tongue. It will be sweet to you if you learn to talk to yourself well internally and seek out other people who will encourage you and talk to you in the right way about your heart and your emotions too. Your body, we talked about. We talked about how oftentimes our hopes are too far away. I want you to pay attention to number three and something specific that Solomon says about your body and how you can use your body or what's physical to lift up your mind or your heart. And that is sensual or physical pleasure. This is chapter 27, verse 9. Solomon says, very simply, that you should be aware that perfume and incense, can you smell it? Perfume and incense doesn't just make you smell good, he says, it makes your heart glad. Perfume and incense makes the heart glad. Here's that mind-body connection again. What's the oil and the perfume in your life that makes your heart glad? You need to have an answer to that, because it will be one of the ways that you can maintain mental wellness. What are the things in your life that are physical that make you feel good? Music does that for me. Does it do it for you? There are times when I feel so knotted inside, when I can't express what's going on, that I will go to my laptop, I will put on a certain playlist of songs, could be jazz, could be punk rock, could be alternative rock, it depends on what I need. I will turn that music on, and goodness gracious, that music will touch me in a way that nothing else can. That music will articulate for me what's going on inside in a way that my own words can't. Music to me is my oil and my perfume. And I don't just like music. I am a person who loves music. It is much more strategic than that. Solomon says you need to be wiser than that, more tactical than that. For me in my life, music is a part of how I stay well mentally. It does that for me. I like to cook. I did not always know this about myself, but round about the age of 40, I figured out, gosh, I really like to experiment in the kitchen. I really like to cook. I do most of the cooking for my family, not because I have to, because I like to. And there's something so good for me when I'm in the kitchen making dinner for my wife and my two kids that the creativity of it, the hands-on of it, whatever it is my oil and my perfume. The smells and the touches of it, it's my oil, it's my perfume. Now see, you could on the outside look at that and go, well, his hobby is just to cook. No, it is way more strategic than that. I cook because I want to be mentally well. And it is my oil and my perfume. It makes my heart glad. You would be wise to figure out what your physical things are that make your heart happy, and then protect doing them. Ask your spouse or your best friends to help you prioritize doing these things in your life, because they guard your heart. They make you well. You see that? Go to the next slide. If you, you can probably tell, as we get here to the end of the message, this is a great overview about a very important subject, but you're going to have to do something about this in order for this to really take root. It's okay to spend 30-plus minutes talking about mental well-being, but I don't think that I've actually made any of you any more well mentally. I don't have those illusions. In order for you to take what we've talked about and actually benefit from it, you need to do something. What you'll find on that back table back there where your bulletin and other things are is a one-sheet set of scripture readings and exercises that you can do this week to work on what we talked about. The end result will be that you can draw up a plan of action for guarding your own heart, for maybe healing some of the ways that your heart is broken or is run down, and then safeguarding it going forward in your life. This is what you need to do. I will leave you with one more verse from the Proverbs about the heart and why you and I should care enough to actually go to work on figuring out how to guard our own hearts. Solomon says in chapter 15, verse 15 of the Proverbs, "A happy heart is like a continuous feast." What a great image. I don't know about you, but I know what it's like to feel depressed. I know what it's like to be sad for a long time. I know what it's like to be eaten up with the pain caused to me by other people. I know what it's like to be anxious. I know what it's like to worry for my family's well-being. I know all that, but I know what I want. What I want is that. I want a happy heart. I want a happy heart because, according to Solomon, if I work at having a happy heart, my life will be like a continuous feast. It will be like all that food I love cooking, serving after serving, course after course, every single thing that I love, I will never see the end. What a fantastic image. The only way you're going to get a happy heart, the only way I'm going to get a happy heart, is if you and I do the hard work of learning how to guard it. I hope that you do that this week. I hope that I do, quite frankly. Would you pause and pray with me here at the end of the message? Our Father in heaven, we thank you that when we take the time to consider your word, even parts of it that are 3,000 years old, we find so much wisdom, so much gold about how to live well, be the people that we dream to be. I am mindful of the lyrics to that song that we sang first today in the service. They make a good prayer to you. We ask you, Father, to be our peace in the troubled sea of our own hearts. We ask you to be our lighthouse, that lamp that is lit within us. We pray that you would always shine in the darkness so that we might follow you. Help us this week. Do the work of learning how to guard our own hearts. And we pray to see the benefit, and we pray that the others around us would reap the reward as well. Amen.